Welcome back to Backstage, where we talk about what's going on behind the scenes and sharing our knowledge to help you start a podcast of your own. My name is Mike Hurley, and I am joined, as always, by Relay FM co-founder Stephen Hackett. Hello.
Hello, Relay FM co-founder Mike Hurley.
Hello, Relay FM co-founder Stephen Michael Hackett.
Hey, OPSEC.
What does the M stand for, you know? Just like Stephen My Hackett?
It's Mike with a Y.
It's nice. Yeah, that's where I got it from.
Weird that
my
we have the same.
My mom named me after Stephen. That's how that works.
I mean, I am older.
Yeah, exactly. What's going on at Relay FM?
We're sharing our full names. Michael David yep. James Hurley.
Yep.
Mikey DJ Hurley.
I tried to make DJ work for like 6 months. And no one would accept it. This was maybe when I was like 16.
People, like, you wanted to be called DJ?
I wanted that to be my nickname, yeah.
Oh, that's a really good nickname.
Yeah, and no one would allow it. You know, my friends just wouldn't let it stick. That time has passed in my life.
For a while, I used my middle initial professionally, and I've backed away from it.
Why?
But I was Stephen M. Hackett everywhere for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Why did you back away?
Because I'm finally gaining SEO on the Genesis guitar player.
Right, okay. Oh, okay. And also, it's like a little pretentious,
it's
right?
A little pretentious.
It's yeah. A little pretentious.
Stephen M.
Yeah. And if my friend, and I'm not going to say their name, is listening to this, who uses their middle initial, I would like to apologize.
Ah.
But there's nothing, you know, I'm sure you have a good reason.
I mean, we also work with somebody who just uses their initials. So, what can you do?
Yeah, but if it's only initials, it's different, you know?
Like if I were SM Hackett.
Yeah. What's going on at Relay FM?
Big stuff. You may know the holiday season is nearing. You thinking about that yet? You thinking about holiday shopping,
what?
Mike? Yeah.
No.
Dude, it's Halloween.
I'm not thinking about that.
The end of this
yeah,
week.
I'm not thinking about it. I might just not do, I don't even know what I'm doing. I have no idea what we're doing for Christmas. Like, it's just a disaster at the moment.
Yeah, we started talking about it last night. I was like, I don't know what we're doing for Halloween in 5 days. Like, let's just settle down.
Halloween's in 5 days?
It's Friday, isn't it? Or
oh,
Sunday? No,
God.
It's Sunday. Sunday.
We never get trick-or-treaters.
The chat room is pointing out that you're using your middle initial in the Howard J. Skellington.
Do you think that Howard J. Skellington, a skeleton lawyer, is not a pretentious person?
He's definitely pretentious.
Exactly. So Howard J. Skellington, pretentious. Pretentious skeleton lawyer. Everyone knows that.
The holidays are coming up, and we're going to do something for the holidays mm-hmm. called Give the Gift of Relay. And we're...
This is not you. This is not continuing from your family. This is us.
I mean, this is Relay, yes. I mean, I guess my kids could be involved if they want to buy a membership for somebody.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how big Relay membership is amongst sixth graders. We'll see, I guess.
We kind of want me to find out.
I don't really want to know.
We could do like a cookies, like a Girl Scout cookies type deal.
Yes. You get Thin Mints and a membership to upgrade.
And the most children that do it get, I don't know.
A percentage?
Of?
Cookies.
Like the company. This is a big gift.
One share of stock for every membership you sell. Somewhere our attorney is launching his phone into the sea. So we're building out the site. We're going to play with gift memberships. This is a feature that Memberful has had that we just haven't rolled out to like what we do. And so we're going to see how this goes. My guess is it'll stay up year round, but we're going to make a push for it in the holidays. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and the idea being that, like, this probably doesn't apply to people listening to this as such, but we're just talking about it because you're on the inside. You know, for people who maybe aren't able to afford a membership but want one, they can ask someone to buy it for them for the holidays. That kind of thing. That's kind of what we're going for there. So maybe this would be a thing that a lot of our younger listeners or students or something might ask for. So,
yeah. The topic this week... We're kind of rounding out.
I'm afraid we had to change the topic. No, we're not doing it.
We are finally rounding out our monetization conversation. So like 9 months ago, we started this conversation about advertising and membership. And this is kind of a cap on that. So we had some like follow-up questions and kind of talk bigger picture about like monetization in creative projects. So do you want to start there?
I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is if monetization is even something you should consider for your show or, you know, asterisk, your creative project in general, depending on what you're making. Because it's really hard to make money from a creative endeavor, honestly, no matter what level you're at, you know, even if you're an established creator, it can be difficult to launch a new thing and make money on it. So one of the things I think that is really, really important before you start anything is do not begin any kind of creative project or podcast with the thought that you could make money from it, because you will make a bunch of bad decisions straight away, right? Because you'll start thinking, hey, how can I make this the most attractive to sponsors or members? Which is not a good way to start a creative project, I feel like. Especially a lot of the types of stuff that we do, I think it's driven by the passion for the thing, for the topic first. And I do believe that, you know, you look at any of your favorite creators, the reason that they are there doing the thing that they do is because they started off with the love of the thing, and their passion and love of the thing generates an audience, and then that audience can generate income for them. That's the right way around to do it. If you start at the making money part, I think it tends to fall apart pretty quickly. And some of the reasons for this, I feel like, is if you say like, oh, we want to make money, you have now some kind of like cold benchmark to negatively judge yourself against. For as long as you're not making money, you are failing at your idea, because your idea was supposed to make you money. And I think that can kind of sour the whole thing over time and make you feel differently about it. It could just frankly as well, making money from any kind of independent creative endeavor happens for a incredibly small percentage of people and takes an incredibly long time for the people who are able to do it, right? Like maybe took like 3 years of me doing any podcasting before I made any money. And it was different then. It was actually, funnily enough, easier to make money back then because there were fewer podcasts and the market wasn't really established. But it took it definitely took me like 5 or 6 years of podcasting every single week with multiple shows before I was able to make enough money to actually have it as a reliable income.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because even in like the early days on 5x5, we weren't making much.
A few $100 a
month. I mean, it didn't really take off until we were out on our own.
Well, and that was part of the reason to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's different. We're running the whole business, right? And so, you know, you have more ways of making money when you run the whole business. So that was part of the reason that we did it, and it, you know, we just did things right, and it worked out for us pretty quickly. Well, me quicker, you longer, because you weren't, rightly so, willing to take the risks that I was willing to take. We were at different times of our life then.
Right. Yeah. Then. I had a mortgage and kids, and
yeah, I didn't have either. I was still living at home with my mom.
Now I'm just thinking about that story where you dropped the thing of milk and it exploded.
Oh, that's a good story. Yeah, I don't know where I've told that story that you know that story, but you know, I did. The drinks part of the fridge just fell off and took with it a bottle of wine, a bottle of Coca-Cola, and some milk, and just like destroyed it all over the floor.
The best combination of beverages.
And I was barefoot, and so couldn't get out of the kitchen, and my mom had to come and help clean it up because I was late for a meeting.
Sorry, I had milk in my socks.
Well, no, it was the glass. The glass from the wine bottle was the real problem.
Yeah.
Anywho, we're all over the place today, man.
It's a Monday, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Do you have any more thoughts on the idea of like, don't start with the money in mind?
Yeah, because it's just going to like sour the creative angle really quickly. Yeah. And you know, you and I have both tried that on projects in the past. And if you think about it as just a way to make some income, then you will kill the creative side of it.
Yeah. I mean, and I've even found that through like projects I've started where I'm like, oh, this is going to be just like we're going to have a big audience for this. It's going to really work out. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't. And then you're like, oh man. And then you're just like kind of bummed out by the project for the whole time. It really sours it. Like
yep.
These things are just way better when it's like all focused on the idea and not on these metrics that you need to hit. And I really do think for metrics, making money is like the worst one you can set yourself. Like it will demoralize you very quickly.
Agreed.
So let's just assume, though, that you've got your creative idea, you're making your really fun podcast and people are super digging it, and you've got, you know, you've got like many thousands of people that have started tuning into the show, you're a couple of years in. If you do have an audience that you think you might be able to make, to monetize, we just have to use the words, there's no other way to talk about it. Which do you choose? What do you think?
I think even in the 7 years we've been around doing Relay, the direct support option has gotten not only a lot better in terms of the tools you can use, but also just like more the way people expect projects to work, right?
Yep.
Like Patreon was, I mean, it was around in 2014, I think.
Something was, yeah.
It wasn't what it is now. And really, we've seen over the last few years this rise of direct support for creators where, like, I mean, we have friends, people we work with who, like, the bulk of their income is direct support from listeners, viewers, you know, readers, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that just wasn't an option not that long ago. And so if we had done this even maybe 2 years ago, I would say, like, I don't know about the direct support thing. You've really got to be a certain size. And some of that is still true. And I still stand by my warning in a previous episode of like, you need to be very careful about balancing rewards versus like investment from listeners or viewers or whatever. Because if you say, I'm going to make an extra episode every week, and then you have five people show up, you're doing a lot of work for $12 a month. And so you got to really be careful balancing that. But if you can make that balance work, direct support's fantastic. And, you know, for us at least, it's really given us a sense of security and certainty that we, you know, didn't have when the pandemic started.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. There is a part which is like, it's kind of upsetting to me, really, which is honestly, I think ads are the best place to start, but ads are the hardest to start with.
Yeah.
Which is the real shame of it. Like, I think ads are the best place to start because it is easier if you can talk to an advertiser to sell an audience of X amount to them, where that same audience of X amount might not become members, right? Like, I think membership, the idea of selling a membership, that comes after a really long time. Like, you have to feel very confident that your audience has a very close connection to you and your project. If they just listen, but they don't really care, they're not going to become members. The same as like something that like, oh, it kills me. When I see brand new projects, they immediately launch for Patreons. I'm like, who's giving you the money? Like, who's doing it? Like, if it's like, oh, hey, here's me and here's my co-host and we've launched a new thing. Like, if it can be really like impossible, like as a mountain to climb. Right? Because people don't have any connection to you. This is actually a similar thing for ads, by the way. Like, I think that if you're going to get ads, you've still got to be confident that your listeners have a good connection to you. Because if you're getting advertisers that are similar to the advertisers on many other podcasts, you've got to hope that the listener's going to remember your promo code when they go to checkout. And I do believe that there's something, again, about the relationship people have to the shows as to where the money comes from. I think that's honestly the crux of all of this, is you need to be confident that your audience truly care about the project to be able to make any money from it. And that comes back to, again, like trying to make the very best show that you can, being reliable to your audience that they can count on what you're saying you're going to give them and have been around for a while so that connection's built. And so that's how you end up being able to get membership, but it also is how you can get ads. But ads is just a harder market to break into now than it used to be. You know, like I really think that if we were launching Relay today, we would struggle more than we did to get our shows in front of advertisers.
Stand outside of Squarespace's office with a boombox over your head.
I don't know if I could get our shows in front of Squarespace.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say that, like, they've told me this many times. Like, Relay FM is one of Squarespace's higher performers, like, as a network. But they support so many shows, and they must just be inundated with people contacting them.
Gotta be.
Asking to become sponsors.
Yeah.
And so I just don't know if we would pass the thresholds, because they must hear from people all day, every day, constantly, 24/7. And it was because we had an existing relationship with them that, you know, it kind of passed through. And now they're like, you know, they just keep renewing us every year because it does so well. But like, you got to get in. And like, this is the thing for us in general. Like, a lot of the big companies that we work with, a lot of the larger like kind of media agencies that we have relationships with, we have existing relationships with them. I don't know how easy it would be to get through the door now. And it's similarly, like, if you have one show and say your show has, people used to say like, oh, 10,000 downloads, that's where you got to get to, like, per episode to get ads. There's a big question mark around that. Like, sometimes you can do less and sometimes you can do more. But the problem is, these days, if you're just one show with that amount of downloads, it's really hard to get in front of the advertisers. Like, it kind of helps to have more. I think we have some questions about this in a minute, so I won't break that down too much. But yeah, look, another form of monetization is merchandise. But again, like ads and like membership, you've got to hope that your audience care enough about you to support you. The way that you do that is by making a quality product, which goes back to the idea of, don't start with the money in mind. Start with making the best product you can first.
And remember, anything that involves people supporting you directly, either merch or membership, you're only going to get a tiny percentage of people.
Oh, super small.
You know, yeah. We're at the size where that's totally fine and totally works, and we're really pumped about it. But that's something you got to keep in mind, right? You're not going to get 50% of your listeners to sign up for a membership. If you do, please tell us how you did that. Why should you maybe not think about monetization? We've approached this from the perspective of, yeah, you should do it. How do you do it? What are some potential downsides?
Well, so one thing, it can change your feeling about the project, right? It turns your art into business, right? So now, you know, there are certain decisions that you now might need to make from the creative angle to support the financial angle. So for example, we have to think now about, like, what do we want to have as part of the paid content? If we have paid content on the shows, that's not going to be in the main shows. We have to come up with different types of content, so we're not taking away from the free shows, right? So that changes the art. Sometimes, right? Like, if you've got three advertisers on an episode, you don't want to make that episode 25 minutes long, because that's just not a good mix for the audience. So you have to come up with more content. Like, you don't have so much freedom as you used to beforehand of just like, hey, the art's just what it is, man. Like, now there's a commerce aspect to it, and you have to find the right balance between those, I think. If you're working with friends, money can change friendships.
Mm-hmm.
It just can. It can change the way that people think about each other. You've really got to have some good conversations about that beforehand. Like, who earns what? What's the split and all that kind of stuff? That's like a whole thing that you have to work out. But for some people, that can be a pretty difficult thing. I feel like I've been pretty lucky where I don't think I've had any lasting damage to any friendship due to a conversation like this.
Oh, hey, can we talk after we record?
Yeah. Oh, I got some stuff to tell you, buddy boy. But it can change a friendship. It, you know, because as well, the thing that you get is the added responsibility. So if you're doing something, if you're doing membership, you've got to put out the content that you said at the time frame that you said for the people that are now paying you for it. And if you have sponsors, you now have deadlines that they're expecting the episode to be out at and all that kind of stuff. So that can also lead back into that friendship part. Like, if you have a friend that's pretty flaky and pretty unreliable, you know, if they're skipping episodes before, it's like, ah, it's no problem, we'll just take the week off. But if they're like, ah, I can't make it on Wednesday, but you've got a show to produce, well, that can add tension into the relationship, and the responsibility can also change the feeling on the show, you know?
I agree with all that. And yeah, I think we've been really fortunate where that hasn't been the case. You know, we've tried to work really hard to keep friendship and work separate. And that's, it can be difficult, but it's an important thing.
Yeah. But I think we've benefited from, like, I know at least I feel this way, like, the people that I work with are pretty like-minded. So we have these kinds of ideas anyway, you know, like, we rely on each other and know that we need to be relied on. Like, we kind of always treated it that way since the beginning. Like, before, again, before monetization was ever a thing, we felt the responsibility of producing the content for the listeners, like, which I think is a pretty important thing. I think we might talk about that next time, right? Like, being reliable,
mm-hmm.
as a thing, and why that's important as a creator.
I mean, if you want to build, if I can make it next month, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, it's just that was good. It's good. You're on it today, man. You had some good breakfast this morning.
I did. What did I eat? Did I eat breakfast?
Or maybe that's the trick.
I think I'm just really tired. I think it's the other way. Like, I had a long weekend, and so
you're at the edge.
I'm gonna fall off the other side. Okay, so we have some listener questions. Matt asks, where do you think the line is for monetization to be worth the work required for said monetization? At what theoretical dollar amount is it worth the effort? To a degree, that's different for everybody. It's, you know, it can change over time with your, you know, like you said, like, you and I were different life stages when we started the company. And so even though we were making the same amount as each other, I needed to wait longer because I just was a little bit further into, you know, adult bill paying than you were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I think maybe some things to look at are like, does it let you make the investments in the project you want to make? You know, whether that's gear or time or outside help. And I think like it needs to be enough where it's not a frustrating amount. Like, I've definitely done projects where they make money, but like, if I actually look at the time and the dollar, it's like, it's so little for the time I put in that it ends up being frustrating and demoralizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really know. I don't think there is like a theoretical amount where once you're over it, it makes sense. But I think you got to take all these things into account.
I think one of the good like first steps is like all of the costs are covered. Like, I always like that one, you know, not time, but like the costs of producing the show can be covered by the monetization. Like, hey, maybe you don't like editing it and you'd like to hire an editor and this allows you to do that. So it makes the production part easier, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But each dollar amount is going to differ person to person, as you say, right? Like, you know, if you're a person who earns like in their day job, like $1,000 an hour, right? Like, any hour that you, Abby, well, can you imagine? Wow. But you just being,
yeah, I don't know what job that is, but
a big special one. You would like your time investment is going to be incredibly hard to recoup if you're looking at it under those kinds of figures. Like, I do this kind of stuff. It's actually something that my wife really helps me with, of like working out like all of the projects that I do, what do I make on them per hour?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just information I like to have, but the numbers are like massively different, but that's my choice to do that, right? Like, there are shows where it's like very negative, right? Because they don't have ads, and some of them by choice. But I just like to know, if I was going to take on some other kind of outside work or whatever, like, it's good to know what I would charge someone, but I don't really use those numbers to make creative decisions so much.
Yeah. And I don't keep up with it quite as closely as you do. I don't time track, but I do have a spreadsheet where each month I see what each of my individual projects make. So I include like 512 Pixels as a project. And if I've done any freelance work, you know, that's in there. And that can be a good metric to help make decisions. And I've made mm-hmm. decisions based on that, honestly.
Yeah. Tony asks, is it too late to make money as an indie podcaster?
I don't think it is. You know, the industry is bigger than it's ever been, but you said it earlier, the advertising side is harder to get into than it was 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an asterisk on this whole question, which I think is helped answered by my answer to the next question from Brunce, which is it possible for an indie podcaster to make a living from this kind of work without being an influencer or having an existing thing or being part of a network?
I kind of struggle. I struggled with this question.
Go on. Why?
Because I don't think we're influencers.
We are in our space. There's no way around it. We are. Like,
maybe I just don't want to be like a van lifer on Instagram, and that's what I think about as.
Yeah, but you're not doing that. Yeah, you know, it's like
not yet.
I came up with a phrase of Casey Wunsch, which is micro famous.
Yes,
and that's what we are. But we are microfluencers in our world, you know? Like, we have a level of influence within the space in which we operate, not within the wider tech field, not within any other part of the world, but within that area. The thing what Brant is talking about, which is actually something that I think is difficult, if, especially for advertising, you know, like all the membership stuff was what we were talking about earlier. You've got to build an audience and you can do that in many ways. But to get advertising, you really, I think now you have to have much larger numbers than you used to get in front of people. Like if you were going to just be knocking on people's door and saying like, hey, sponsor my podcast. I expect now you've got to get higher numbers because the average podcast audience size has increased massively. You know, like when we were starting out, the biggest podcasts had hundreds of thousands of listeners. Now they have millions. And so like the threshold has changed so wildly that I do believe that one of the things that continues to be of a great benefit to us is we are a podcast network. So we can approach deals as a network. We have multiple shows that we can sell to an advertiser, which brings up the overall amount of people that they can get their product in front of. If we were coming to this with a lot of our shows just as they are, I think it would be a lot more of a struggle. Like if Connected was its own show, or if Upgrade was its own show, we would have a tougher battle to get that in front of people. But when we combine them, two of them, which we do very frequently in an ad deal, it's a much easier sell. So I do think it's becoming harder and harder to do this kind of stuff on your own.
All right. Eric had a question that was kind of related to this, so I wanted to bring it in because obviously you're talking about monetization. The other side of that coin is like how big your show or project is. And so Eric asks about download numbers and how much they count for anymore. Is it still a driving factor? Eric also notes that he subscribes to both normal and bonus feeds of Relay shows. You don't have to do that, Eric. Please.
Yes, you don't need to do
please
that.
Please unsubscribe from regular Connected and just stay on Connected Pro.
Yeah, because here's the thing. you're actually making it worse in a way. Love you, Eric. I appreciate your enthusiasm. But the thing is, download numbers are one part of the advertising puzzle because you get the ad by having a download number, right? You renew that ad or get someone to come back with success from the advertiser, like the advertisement, right? So if we say to a company, hey, we have 60,000 people that listen to this show, but like 30,000 of them are people subscribing twice, they're going to get at less than half of the take-up that they're expecting from the advertisement, right? Because there's not going to be as many people to actually hear it and buy the product. So that's the kind, and that also kind of answers the question. Download counts are very important to get the initial deal or interest, but then the audience has to buy the product for the advertiser to want to continue advertising on the show. Otherwise, they just throw money into a black hole. And it's super interesting. Sometimes we have stuff that we're convinced is going to work and it doesn't work. And then, you know, it's just like a really interesting balance of trying to find the right fit for sponsors and shows. But download counts are very important because you need to be able to use that as a thing to go to an advertiser and say, like, this is how many listeners we have. Would you like to get your message in front of them? It doesn't help to have them artificially inflated. Not that you've done any damage. I will say, Eric, if you are one of like 60,000 people doing this, then there is some damage, but that's not your fault.
And lastly, Matt asks, for a new podcaster with a growing listenership, what monetization method would you be most likely to recommend between Patreon, Memberful, and Apple Podcast subscriptions?
What do you think?
I mean, I would definitely say Patreon or Memberful because they're platform agnostic and the two products have a lot of overlap and obviously they're the same company. You know, we chose Memberful back in the day over Patreon because it had features that we liked more, including like the ability to build it into your own site. So it's more sort of white labeled.
There are also features of Patreon that I actively dislike.
Like public numbers?
I don't like the public numbers, which you can turn off, but then if you turn them off, you're hiding them, which is weird.
Yeah.
And I don't like the requirement to post something to Patreon to get the money.
Yeah.
In a lot of instances, like because then it's like your Patreon is very focused around what you're going to give me, which I don't think works always, as we spoke about earlier, right? Like, here's different tiers. Each different tier, you will get more content, more whatever. And honestly, for a show, it could just be like, can you just support us? And Memberful, I think. And while you can do that with Patreon, the culture of Patreon kind of wants that as a thing. And so, you know, even as Zach's saying, like, you can do the pay-per-month thing, which I know you can do, but like Patreon still has this cultural encouragement of extras. And I feel, and also like, here is another platform you do need to maintain and manage and pay attention to. You've got like comments and messages and all that kind of stuff. Where you say Memberful, it's much more like, hey, here's the system that you can use to just do whatever you want on top of it. So I think I'd much prefer that for my stuff and for our stuff than Patreon.
Totally agree.
What about Apple Podcasts?
I mean, you are limiting your support base to people who use Apple Podcasts, which, depending on what you're doing, maybe most of your listeners. It's not for us, and it's not for a lot of tech podcasts. And those people are Apple's customers and not yours. You can't communicate with them, and Apple's cut is ridiculous. So I love
they do not deserve anything.
I love you, Apple Podcast team, but thumbs down on Apple Podcast subscriptions.
Hey, this isn't nothing we haven't told them. Like, 30% is just way too much, considering how little you do get. You get nothing. It's, you know, and you have to work harder for it as a creator, because you have to upload everything to their systems too. We said this on shows too. 30% is just way too high. It's just far, far too high. When you look something like a Patreon or a Memberful, it's single digit percentages, and maybe a monthly fee or something, which is just a way better way of doing it, because you know that what you're paying for is the card processing fees and some admin stuff. Mm-hmm. Where with Apple, it's like, I feel like you just want my money. Like, I don't really understand why you want my money so bad, but it turns out they do,
you know?
I just want the money.
Hey, look, we got MagSafe back, so...
We had to pay for it? Now we have to put all our shows on Apple Podcasts because they gave us a lot.
30% of your electric bill.
Oh, man.
Now goes to Apple. Yeah, so that's monetization. I think we're closing the chapter on this little mini-series. Next time, we're going to talk about the consistency and reliability angle. And I think that's a really interesting thing that a lot of people overlook the importance of. So that'll be
time management too. If you know, time management in your creative projects also leads into this. If that's something you have thoughts about or struggles with, you can send us in those questions. Stephen, how do people do that?
You can email us at backstage@relay.fm, or if you're in the Discord, ask with the command ?askbackstage.
All right, so until next time, when we ask you to come backstage with us, I'm Mike Hurley and he's Stephen Hackett. Say goodbye, Stephen.
Bye, y'all.